On behalf of the Saber Oral History Project, I'm Steve Jaremko. This is part one of three of my interview with Dick Grote, conducted at the Champion Lakes Golf Resort near Ligonier, PA, on October 10, 2019. Okay. Ready?
Sure.
Okay. Today is October 10, 2019, and on behalf of Saber, the Society of American Baseball Research, we are interviewing Mr. Dick Grote for our oral history project. My name is Steve Jaremko, and I am visiting with Mr. Grote at the Champion Lakes Golf Course near Ligonier, Pennsylvania. By way of introduction, Mr. Grote was one of the most outstanding shortstops to ever grace a baseball diamond. He was also a two-sport athlete who played basketball as well as baseball. Mr. Grote played in the big leagues for 14 years. He began with the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1951 and played for the St. Louis Cardinals, Philadelphia Phillies, and finished his playing career with the San Francisco Giants in 1967. After hitting .325 for the world champion Pittsburgh Pirates in 1960, Mr. Grote was voted as the most valuable player in the National League. Besides the 1960 Pirates, Mr. Grote also helped the Cardinals with their World Series victory over the New York Yankees in 1964. He was a five-year All-Star, selected eight times in 1959, 60, 62, 63, and 64. In his 14-year baseball career, Mr. Grote compiled a .286 batting average with 2,138 hits in 1,929 games. He led the NL in double plays five times, putouts four times, and assists twice. By the end of his career, he ranked ninth in MLB history in games at shortstop with 1,877, fourth in double plays, 1,237, and among NL career leaders in putouts, assists, and total chances. Mr. Grote appeared on the cover of Sports Illustrated three times. Mr. Grote played the 1952 season as guard for the Fort Wayne Pistons of the National Basketball Association. He is one of 13 athletes that have played both in the NBA and the MLB. Now let's hear his story. Welcome, Dick Grote, to the Saber Oral History Project.
Nice to be with you here this afternoon.
What was your given name at birth?
Richard Marl Grote.
Where and when were you born?
November 4th, 1930. I was born in Wilkinsburg, but lived the major portion of my young life in Swissville, which is a neighboring borough.
Tell us a little bit about your parents. What were their names and what did they do?
My mother was Grace. My father was Martin. My father was a real estate insurance man. He'd born and reared in northern Pennsylvania, around Kinzu. They were married in Kane, Pennsylvania, and my two brothers and one sister were born in Kane. And then my father got in the oil business. They struck a well, and they came to Pittsburgh. He ended up in the real estate and insurance business the rest of his life.
And as far as your siblings go, are there any of them still alive?
No. There was 19 years between my oldest brother and myself, 18, the other one 17, my sister, and 11 with my other sister. So you could say I was the baby of the family.
So you described the neighborhood in Pittsburgh a little bit. You said it was you were born in Wilkinsburg and lived in Swissville. And could you describe what was your neighborhood like?
It was just an average neighborhood. My father was in the business in the neighboring town just next door, Braddock. He's a real estate and insurance man. I never wanted for anything. My father sent five of us to college, and I was fortunate enough to get a basketball scholarship to Duke University.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what sports did you play as a youngster?
Basically, I played basketball. I played baseball only when I was a sophomore in high school for the first time. And I grew up, basketball's always been my first love. And I felt I was a much better basketball player than baseball player.
Well, how did you get started with baseball? Sandlot, American Legion, high school,
then American Legion, and then everything turned around when I was a junior in high school. They had what they called the Hearst All-Star Game, and I ended up being elected to play in it. I was just some kid named Dick that played. Got in the game late, got a base hit. Happened to be lucky enough to come up in the ninth inning with two runs behind and men on first and second, and two outs. And I was fortunate enough to triple him home and won the trip to New York. And I represented Pittsburgh both my junior year in high school and my senior year. And it put me, how do you want to put it, in front of the news media. That's how I ended up finally getting a basketball, not baseball, a basketball scholarship to Duke University.
Tell us about your basketball career.
I just loved it. I was fortunate enough to lead the nation in scoring my junior and senior year, averaging 26 a game. And for a guy that was 6 feet tall, I was pretty darn fortunate. Loved every minute of it and was extremely pleased when I was the number three draftee in the NBA draft that year.
What positions did you play?
Basketball? I was a point guard.
Now, you attended college. You mentioned Duke University after
high school. I graduated from Duke University. That's correct.
And did you? What was your major in school?
Well, believe it or not, I started out in business, and Coach Coombs settled that in a hurry. He was a baseball coach, former pitcher for the Philadelphia A's under Carney Mack, and he ended up saying, what are you doing in business? I said, that's where you always fall into if you don't know what you want. He said, young man, you're going to play both basketball and baseball professionally. You might want to coach high school, so you better end up with a teaching degree. So he changed all my classes himself.
Did you have U.S. military service?
I served in the Army for 2 years. I played my rookie year with the Pirates at 52. As soon as I graduated from Duke, I went in the Army in 53, returned to the Pirates in 1955.
And what rank did you have in the military?
I went all the way to corporal.
My dad was a corporal as well. What did your family think about you playing professional baseball and professional basketball?
My father loved every minute of it. He was a big baseball fan. Never missed any games in Pittsburgh when I was playing with the Pirates. A little different when I was straight.
When you were growing up, did you attend many of the Pirate games?
Pretty much. And then, of course, Mr. Rickey worked me out between my junior and senior year at Duke and offered me the chance to go to the big leagues as a junior. And I said I owed my senior year to Duke University. I'm going back, but if you make the same offer to me, I promise you I'll sign with the Pirates. And Mr. Rickey lived by his word. Signed me the day I came back from the College World Series, joined the Pirates in New York the next day, watched the Giants Pirate game, pinch hit the next one, and played every game the rest of the season.
Who were your favorite? Did you have any favorite major league ball players at the time?
Oh, Ralph Kiner when I was growing up, obviously. And I ended up, ironically, my rookie year, rooming with Ralph the last month of the season, which was an absolute joy.
Now, did you ever? I read somewhere where you met Paul Wehner.
Yes.
Yes. And was he? What was your connection with
Paul
Wehner?
He had a batting cage.
Oh. Yeah.
And I used to go out there in my rookie year in the mornings and hit against his machine. He helped me. He could flat out hit. Take my word for it.
I believe you. So the day when you were signed by Branch Rickey at that time, was the bonus baby rule that was in effect or not yet?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Would you have taken it if
I was a bonus baby.
Yeah.
But there were no restrictions.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't have to go to the major league. That's the main reason why I signed with the Pirates. Mr. Rickey had promised me that a year before. If I'd sign, he'd put me right with the Pirates. I never wanted to play minor league baseball.
Never a one game of minor league baseball. So you signed June 16th, and then you got third place voting as Rookie of the Year in 1952.
Yeah.
And so what can you recall about your first major league game?
I pinch hit. All I could think of, I was facing Jim Hearn. I took the first pitch, and then he threw me a curveball, sidearm, and I can remember stepping out of the batter's box and saying, "What in the world am I doing here?" And I ground out right back to him. I started the next day and went 2 for 4 and knocked in 2 runs. So I was very pleased with my first start in the major league.
So some of the other players, we mentioned Ralph Kiner, but on that 52 Pirates team, I'm going to throw a couple names out and tell me any recollections of them. Gus Bell, George Betkovich, Bobby Del Greco, Murray Dixon, Bob Friend.
First of all, George Betkovich played for the Red Sox with Ted Williams. Could not have been better with me. Talked hitting with me and helped me all through that year. Of course, Bob Friend and I stayed together for years and years with the Pirates. I don't know how it was for other bonus babies, but the Pirates treated me extremely well.
When you first started as a professional ball player, then what kind of jobs did you do in the off season?
Well, I went back to finish up on my degree, and that's the year I ended up playing in the NBA, which is worthwhile since I'm going to class in Durham, North Carolina, and playing in the NBA in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I finally had to quit, and they called me back and said, "We need you." They got me my own private jet, or not jet, but plane, flew me from Durham to Fort Wayne to play back and forth back in 1952-53.
Mr. Grote, was that a difficult decision, the basketball versus baseball at that time? You were professional in both.
That's what I wanted to do. Was play basketball for sure. That was my first love. I was a much better basketball player.
Mr. Rickey, a hell of a baseball player.
Mr. Rickey made it rather simple. You play NBA basketball, you lose the rest of your bonus money. That settled my basketball career in a hurry.
So you, after your debut season, you had a very good year. You batted 284 that first year in 52, and you really did have a great year. You were probably one of the highest batting average players I had that year. Pittsburgh
Pirates. I led the Pirates in here. Yeah. I know that.
Well, that 52 team was a pretty bad team. It was.
We were terrible.
What can you recall about your manager that time, Billy Meyer?
One of the most finest people I've ever known in my life. He really treated me well. I thought the world of Billy Meyer.
Well, what do you suppose the Pirates had such a difficult period during those early 50s? What was their problem as a team?
Well, I can't answer that other than the fact that we were not a very good ball club. And Mr. Rickey was trying to rebuild it in a hurry, which wasn't easy. But I can tell you one thing. The fundamentals that we started with back and when I came out of service in 55, 56, led to eventually winning the World Championship. Mr. Rickey made it happen.
Well, that's where I'm going next. In 1955, you came back from 2 years in the service, and now Fred Haney was the manager. Any thoughts about Fred Haney?
He treated me good, but again, I was still a youngster, just learning how to play.
Well, at that time, this is just what you were saying. We have, coming into the team in 1955, you have players like Vernon Law, Bob Friend was on the team, Elroy Face, Ron Klein, Bob Perkey, Frank Thomas, Roberto Clemente, Dale Long, Gene Freese, Jerry Lynch, Eddie O'Brien, Johnny O'Brien, and Roman Mahos, just to name a few.
Mr. Rickey signed those people. He's the one that really developed the 60 club. But it takes you a while to learn how to play Major League Baseball. I mean, I was fortunate to have a great baseball coach in college, but that's a different world, college baseball in a major league. And again, I had guys that helped me play the game. George Strickland was the starting shortstop. The minute they put me in the lineup, they moved him to second base. He could not have taught me more. A wonderful person, treated me really well, was traded to Cleveland and played on a World Championship team over there, back at shortstop.
There was also, there was a player shortstop named Gare Alley that played for a short period while you were in the service.
Yeah, he went to Wake Forest.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I knew Gare.
Oh, did you? So some of these other players we talked about, any thoughts? Well, we'll talk later about the pitching staff, Elroy and Vern Law. Bob Perkey was on the Pirates at that time. Do you have any thoughts of recollections?
Very dear friend of mine. He ended up, he and Jerry Lynch, my partner in the golf course, both played for Cincinnati. And we still have, ironically, our insurance with Bob Perkey Agency.
Yeah. Well, he was from Bethel Park. I actually knew his son. I graduated with his son.
Good guy.
The one that passed away.
Really a good guy.
We mentioned a couple other players. We can talk about Clemente later. Like Frank Thomas at that time was a big slugger for the Pirates.
Correct.
Yeah.
He moved in 58 when we made our move. Finished second, he came from the outfield to third base. And we actually had a run at Milwaukee. Made it a good race coming down the stretch. We were in dead last in the middle of the season. But we had now paid the price and learned how to play. And as a team, we really, Mazeroski had come up from the minors and turned himself into the greatest second baseman ever to play the game. That club matured very quickly in 1958.
Well, yeah, like in 56, you could see how they progressed. In 55, they were eighth place. In 56, they were in seventh, and then they started to improve. In 56, they got Mazeroski, and Bill Verdon and Bob Skinner.
Correct.
Yeah. So they really started to put this...
Well, Bob Skinner came out of the minor leagues. He was in the power organization. Again, Mr. Rickey had made the deal for Bill Verdon before he left the Pirates. And then basically he was the man that built the 60 team, pretty much, until Joe Brown made the big trade with Cincinnati.
Right, with Frank Thomas. Yeah, we're, you know, in 56, Bobby Bragan came in to manage the Pirates. Yep. Do you have any recollection of him?
Very well. He hated me. And he and I became extremely close friends later on. And really, I learned the game of baseball from two people, Bobby Bragan and Danny Murtaugh. Both of them were excellent managers. Both of them knew how to play the game and taught me well.
Were they good with the players, both of those gentlemen?
I thought they were. I was always upset because Bobby really didn't think I was a shortstop. And then in 1960, he was coaching with the Dodgers. He called me aside out in L.A. after a game, apologized, said he was dead wrong about me, and I was going to get his vote for the MVP in the National League. And he and I became very good friends from that point on.
I read somewhere where he was managed a minor league club somewhere. He was like 89 years old when he was managing a baseball club.
I didn't know.
And also that same year, 56, Joel Brown came in as Pirates GM.
Yeah.
And do you have any recollections or thoughts on Joel Brown?
Yeah. He was the one who traded me.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'll ever forget Joe Brown.
So in 57, you had a great year. You were, again, in the voting for MVP. You hit .315 that year. And I wanted to ask you, you were selected team captain of the Pirates at some point. And how does that happen?
They just appoint a captain. Bobby Bragan appointed me captain.
Oh, he does. And so it was just an honorarium, or what was your role? What does a team captain do?
Well, I hope he does a lot, but you set the standards. Certain things you do and live by. I guess you don't realize until you go to St. Louis a few years ago, and a lot of the young rookies were there honoring the 64 club, and I didn't realize I had my two daughters with me, and these young players ended up saying, "You have any idea how much your father taught us how to play the game?" And that goes back to the way Danny Murtaugh and Bobby Bragan taught me how to play the game. Because you have to be awful careful. Remember, Ken Boyer was the captain of that team. He and I were like this. And I certainly didn't want to step on his toes.
So in 57... some of the players that came to the team at that time were Hank Foyles and Dee Fondy and Gene Baker. Did you play much with those fellas?
Yeah. Hank caught a lot of games. Gene played infield. He and I became very good friends. He's really a good guy.
Yeah, he was actually the first manager, I guess, of the minor league system.
Oh, he stayed with the Pirate organization for years.
I remember he was in Batavia for managing in Batavia.
Just a good guy.
The 58 Pirates, we talked a little bit about Frank Thomas had such a good year. that year, and that's the year that they traded him to the Cincinnati Reds after that year. But the guys that also came up that year were Ted Kluszewski and Dick Stewart, Dick Schofield, and Red Witt. Any thoughts on those fellas?
They traded me because they thought Ducky could play every day.
Now, the 59 Pirates, they had...
We fell on our ass.
Pardon?
We fell on our ass.
So the 58 Pirates were really a great team. They came in second that year, as you mentioned, that they were doing really good. And let me ask you at this time, who were the toughest pitchers that you faced in this time? Who gave you a lot of trouble?
The Dodgers always had a good pitching staff. They were always tough. But that's how they win. That's why they, for years, Dodger pitchers have always been hard throwers. And like to throw at you. More so than any other ball club.
So you got crushed back a few times.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So Don Drysdale, was he notorious for that?
Yeah. In fact, in 1963, which I consider the best year I ever had in my baseball career, I had a 27-point lead on August 19th. I was hitting 340-something, leading the league by 27 points. My first time up, Drysdale hit me on the hand. I went 0-for-20-something after that because I kept playing. And it cost me the batting title, I'm sure.
So Ted Kluszewski was somebody that came to the Pirate Club that year, but he didn't seem to pan out. He seemed to lose something.
He did a good job, but Dick Stewart was just coming out of nowhere at that time.
Then in 59 is when the big trade that Joe Brown made for traded Frank Thomas, and there were a couple other fellas, Jim Pendleton, I think, and Whammy Douglas.
A number of them.
There were
four winning the trade for three. Hoag Haddix and Smokey.
Yeah, and that seemed like the last missing piece of the puzzle.
It was.
That they needed. So 59, there was probably one of the greatest games pitched of all time was the Harvey Haddix game of the 12 perfect innings, and you didn't play in that game. You remember that?
Very well. I was in a semi-slump at that time, and Danny benched me. And I had one of those years. It just always kind of amazes me because I get benched and took pay cuts. We're hitting 260 something. Modern day player hits 270, he wants a raise.
That's right. So, anyway, you made your first All Star game that year, too, 59.
And that's when they had. It was in Pittsburgh.
It was in Pittsburgh. But they had two. Two All-Star games at that time for you.
Correct.
Yeah. So then now comes the big season, 1960.
Right.
And you had a really spectacular year. You batted .325 and just were the impetus behind the winning team.
That was a very special year. And that was a very special group of guys. I mean, they played the game the way it should be played. Everybody found a way to advance that runner from second to third. Something you don't see as much anymore. Because they build smaller ballparks and want more home runs for Joe Fan that doesn't know the game. And that's what you end up with. Everybody up there swinging for the home run.
Oh, yeah. Now, that season also brought in a It was where they added a few more players that made a difference. Vinegar Ben Mizell helped to round out the pitching staff.
Unbelievable. He was 11-3 or something, whatever it was, way over 500. I mean, just walked in here and made a big difference. Vinegar had a great year for us. In fact, he lost the game to the Cubs in Wrigley Field 1-0 when we were struggling. You don't want to lose to the Cubs when you're fighting for the pennant. That was a heartbreaker. He had really pitched well. That's one of the few losses he had because he pitched 9 innings.
Well, Vern Law had a big year that year, too. Bob Friend also did
great
well.
Year.
Everybody seemed to.
I mean, that pitching staff, Elroy was as phenomenal as ever. I mean, when I see what the relief pitchers do today compared to Elroy face, I want to laugh. It's just a joke. He'd pitch 3 or 4 days in a row. 2 innings, 1 innings, 4 innings, whatever it took. Just, I've always said he's the greatest relief pitcher the game ever saw.
Well, we also had some other players that came in. There was Rocky Nelson, who platooned with Dick Stewart.
Did a superb job for us.
Yeah, he hit 300.
Both offensively and defensively.
Hal Smith was a second string catcher.
Another good job.
Gino Simoli was on that.
Another good job.
Fred Green, Clem Levine.
You shocked me with that one.
Fred Green?
I didn't think that was his first year, but maybe it was. He came out of the power organization.
He may have come up the year before. He may have been 59. You probably got me right on that one. So Clem Levine, they brought in from the Dodgers, yeah. So he was a
veteran. I mean, there wasn't anybody that didn't do a job for us that year. And every possible way, George Witt, who only had a few starts, but always ended up with a key start and give us a good performance.
He had a really good year in 1958.
Right.
And then he seemed to have some trouble after that.
He did, and he had some arm problems.
Yeah. So we mentioned Dick Schofield before. There was one part in the season where you were injured with a broken wrist, and
yeah.
Dick Schofield stepped in, and he
did a magnificent job.
Yes.
In every way.
Also wanted to ask you about another player who was a coach who came to play a little bit at that time. Was Mickey Vernon.
Mickey Vernon. He's the best. Great guy. Really a good guy. He was the one at the 60 All-Star game. He convinced me to go and say hello to Ted Williams, of whom I wanted to, but I was intimidated. And he said, he's the greatest guy in the world. Just go over and talk to him. He was taking batting practice. To show you what he did, I talked Bob Skinner into going out with me. We went out there. He skipped the trip to the plate in batting practice to talk to us. I've never forgotten that. Just the nicest man in the world. He knew exactly how Bob Skinner hit. He knew more about me and my hitting than we did about him.
Well, you mentioned Bob Skinner. Talk a little bit about Bob Skinner and then Bill Burden. I always wanted to ask you about those guys as outfielders.
Both of them. People don't realize Bob Skinner didn't look fast, but he could flat out run. Could steal bases for you. I was fortunate enough
blacktop or whatever. California didn't have that.
I had that great year in St. Louis, and I finished second in the MVP voting and the whole bit to Sandy Koufax. I was able to talk to the general manager and talked him into buying Bob Skinner. And he and I roomed together the next 2 years in St. Louis. The year we won the pennant in St. Louis, he hit over 300. Skins and I have been dear friends for years and years.
You still ever talk to him?
Oh, sure.
Bill Verdon. Talk about Bill.
I roomed with Bill from the day he came to the Pirates until I was traded. We were together constantly. In fact, the four of us used to go to dinner. Skins, Harvey Haddix, Bill Verdon, and myself.
Well, I'd like to hear a little bit about Harvey Haddix, too, since we talked about him.
One of the nicest guys in the world. And when you know, that's one of the few games I missed in my career with Pittsburgh, when he pitched that unbelievable game.
You know, Clemente missed that game, too. They had Joe Christopher in the outfield.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
It was Joe Christopher's debut.
Okay.
Yeah. The Braves, they were a tough team at that time, the Milwaukee Braves.
Yes, they were.
They had Warren Spahn and Lee Burdett, and they had Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews.
They had a lot of thunder on that team.
They sure did.
Eddie Matthews and Henry Aaron. Bruton was in center field. I'm trying to figure out who's on first base. Let me think of it.
Joe Adcock.
Who?
Joe Adcock.
Right. That's exactly who was there.
Well, let me ask you, who did you regard at that time as being the best hitters that you knew of?
Ted Williams.
No, you won't let me get mine.
I don't think there's any question. And I played with Stan, and what an absolute joy that was.
That was his last year, wasn't it, Stan?
Yeah, I hit in front of him all year. I never had so many good balls to hit in my life. Nobody's going to walk me in his face, Stan Musial. I mean, he's just a class gentleman in every way. It was an absolute joy to put a uniform on alongside him.
So, we were talking about some of these other players, and you've had so many good recollections. Tell us about Don Hoke.
What about him? He and I were close friends, very close, and in a million different ways. I mean, Don talked a lot, but he also performed extremely well. Really knew how to play the game. Always advance that runner, do all the right things, did an excellent job at third base. I was proud to play next to him.
He seemed like a very intense player. He was inspiring to people.
He was,
like you were. You had the same aggressiveness that
not quite as aggressive as he was.
Well, he had a nickname. Bob Prince called him Tiger. Yeah. Now, did Prince have a name for you?
Did what?
Did Prince have a name for you? A nickname?
No, he didn't. I'm the only one he didn't have a nickname for.
Well, he called Bill Verdon the Quail.
Quail.
Yeah. Yeah. And how about Bob Skinner? Did he have
the
one?
The dog.
The what?
The dog.
Oh, I didn't know that. Now, Clemente had a couple names, Arriba and... So tell us a little bit about Clemente.
My opinion, the greatest baseball player, talent-wise, I've ever seen. There wasn't anything in the game that he couldn't do as well or better than anybody else in the game. He was that good. In every way. Hit, run, throw. There wasn't anything that Bobby couldn't do.
How about Dick Stewart? We can have any thoughts on Dick Stewart? They called him Dr. Strangeglove.
That's a strange story. I've never been able to figure that one out. God bless him, he's gone. But he was loved by everybody on our club. And I mean that sincerely. Just as the best natured guy, and just, he was a con artist, whatever, you knew exactly. You know, he could teach you on the golf course and you still loved him. Everybody loved him. They didn't like him in Boston. They didn't like him in Philadelphia. I've never, ever been able to figure that out.
Were you teammates with him in Philly?
Because in 60 Powers, we loved him.
Were you teammates with him in Philly?
No.
No. Okay. I know there was. He was on the Phillies when you were.
That was after I was gone.
What was his? Was he really that bad of a fielder that they gave him that nickname?
No.
Because he caught a hot dog wrapper.
He got the reputation because he earned it, but he earned it for lack of concentration. Not that he couldn't play. He'd be down at first base. So this is actually a fact. I missed that curveball last time. Oh, whack! I've got that ball go flying right by him. He's still thinking about why he struck and missed that pitch at the plate. Just a guy I really liked. I thought the world of him. I really liked Dick Stewart.
We mentioned Bob Oldis before. Do you have any thoughts
about
Bob?
Good guy. Bob was one of those guys that's just good to have on your club. He kept all of us loose.
So we want to talk about the pitchers a little bit. Vern Law, what kind of pitcher was he?
He just go out there and grind it out. Was in great shape, a good fielding pitcher. He did everything, even a pretty darn good hitter. Vern had good stuff. If he told you before the game he's going to pitch a guy a certain way, he pitched him that way. Just somebody you would love to have on your team anytime. He was that special in every way.
Did Danny Murtaugh or the pitchers, like before you would meet, you would be facing a club, would they have meetings?
Oh, sure.
And would that be at the beginning of the series and say, how are we going to pitch this? Or
first game of the series, whomever was starting that first game had the scorecard, and the other pitcher would be right next to him. And they'd go over each and every hitter, and how Vernon wanted them one way and Friend didn't, they could adjust, whatever. But we had meetings before every series.
Did Danny ever ask the pitchers to brush anybody back or knock them down?
No.
I would imagine.
Tell us a little bit about Bob Friend as a pitcher.
Bob had a great career, I'm telling you. He was a rookie the year before I signed. And he stayed with the Pirates for a long time, I'll tell you that. He won 19 games in 60. That's a big edge when you have him winning 19 and Vernon 20-some.
So the series itself was an incredible World Series. I think it's one of the all-time best.
It was.
It was so fascinating because you had the Yankees with all their power and the Pirates were the collection of just everybody who came together and the team gelled. So give me your thoughts on playing the Yankees for the 1960 World Series.
First of all, you know that they're the most dominating team in all of baseball. And you go into that game and you have that on your mind, and Vernon comes right out, he and Elroy, And you walk in that locker room saying, we're going to beat these guys. Because I can remember that vividly when, I forget the pitcher, hit the ground ball at second base. The minute Maz got it and gave it to me, it was a tailor-made double play. And that's the way the game ended. And it led us to believe we could beat the Yankees. And then everybody said, oh, they did this. Who cares?
Because they had some blowouts.
You ready for the comparison?
Yeah.
We come in celebrating because we beat the Yankees 6-4. Every game that they killed us, did you see that when Mantle hit that ball? So, nobody talked about the game. We had no chance to win those three games. Whitey shut us out twice. Because when you let him get out in front, you're never going to get a good ball to hit. Never.
So he was a pretty good pitcher then, Whitey Ford.
Very good. He started the first game against the Cardinals, and Gibson got him out 1-2-3. Right off the bat, we started swinging the bats, and he didn't go anywhere that first game. We kicked his ass. But when you're taking strikes and letting him get out in front all the time, boy, he was tough. Had great control, really knew how to pitch.
In talking about the series, you guys kept coming back. The Pirates after you'd have a blowout, what would the team? How would they get back on it and say we're going to do this?
The game we got beat. I mean, there's absolutely not one person did I ever hear discuss the game after we get beat 10-0 or 12-0. We got our ass kicked. That's the end of it. Why would you go back and reminisce over how you got your brains beat?
Just get back in the saddle, huh? Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
And we had three guys. That was it. Haddix, Law, and Face. That could get the ball down. Yankees were a dead high ball hitting club. And the rest of our staff couldn't get the ball any lower than here. And that's why they beat our brains in. It's a whole different world.
Now, Bobby Richardson was voted as
in the
series. I didn't. I guess he did have a good performance. But
he did. He's good.
Yeah. But
he's a great player.
Yeah. Actually, you thought Mazeroski.
I thought Elroy should have won.
Or Elroy, yeah. That's right. He had
three saves.
Three saves, yeah. So you get to that last game in that series, which was just one of the greatest ever. And is there any way you could describe, you know, being a participant and also somebody who witnessed that game? There wasn't no strikeouts. The score was kind of. It really, you know, it was back and forth, and nobody knew what would happen.
I mean, that was almost a summation of the 1960 season for us. We came from behind from the seventh inning on. I can remember when it happened. I don't know what part of the season. But I can remember Murtaugh having a clubhouse meeting at home. And he said, guys, I like where we stand, and I like what you've been done. Try to give me a chance to relax. You're allowed to score before the seventh inning. I mean, we came from the seventh inning back. Not once or twice, but a jillion times it seemed. It just, that club didn't know how to, and it wasn't any one person. Everybody on that club had a piece of the action, always. I mean, I can remember in the seventh game of the World Series doing something I'd never done. I can't ever remember doing it in my career other than that game. I come up with men on first and second after the bad hop.
Tony Kubek got his took a bad hop and the ball hit him in the throat, right?
First and second, nobody out. The biggest fear I had in my entire career, not just then or yesterday or the day before, I can't run a lick. I never could. I was a tailor-made double play man. And that's why I worked so hard at going the other way. Bobby Shantz was on the mound. And he kept giving me off speed in here. The only time I can ever remember trying to go to right field with him, I couldn't handle him. I stepped outside, and this is exactly what went in my mind. Screw you, Bobby. I'm going to swing and hit it and forget it. He threw that same pitch in here, and I hit a bullet between third and short. I never would ever pull the ball in that situation before or since. I said, it could have just as easy been a line drive one hop to the shortstop, which would have ended the whole thing. But instead, I become the tying run at first.
Yeah,
I think we were supposed to win. The big guy upstairs won the series.
I think so. I think Bobby Shantz did a great job in that game for the Yankees when he came in. But
magnificent!
Yeah. Tell me your thoughts when Hal Smith tied the game, and then in the ninth inning,
he didn't tie it.
Well, they went ahead, right?
Two runs.
Well, two runs. That's right. Wow. Yeah.
When he hit it, I'm on third base. There was absolutely no doubt as that was going to Shenley Park. There was no ballpark going to hold that one. He hit it a mile over that 406 side out there. And then the Yankees.
Field was not friendly. I mean, I know they had the Kiner's Corner, Greenberg Gardens there for all, but it wasn't a very good place for.
That was my rookie year that I played when we had Greenberg Gardens. There was nothing cheap about that home run Hal Smith hit. I've always said that was the most magnificent, biggest, forgotten home run in baseball history. Gave us a two-run lead going into the ninth. Goddamn Yankees wouldn't go away.
So what were your... describe for us, what it felt like when Maz came to the plate in the ninth inning.
All I can remember is I put my helmet on because I was a fourth hitter in the inning. I was down like this level, maybe, in the dugout. And I remember all of us saying, get off the wall, get off the wall. And it carried right on over. And, to win a World Series in your own hometown, when they hadn't had one for a lot of years, pretty darn special.
Well, personally, I can tell you it's the single memory that stays with me as a little kid when I was about 5 years old when that happened. And I never forgot it. So the end of that, you mentioned your batting helmet, and I just wanted to ask you, at one point in the 50s, didn't the Pirates, it seemed like all the old baseball cards and everything, you always had their helmets on. Did they have position players wearing helmets at one time? And how did that go?
Oh, shit.
Huh?
Terrible. Well, first of all, you had to have a wing on the helmet to get it down to get the sunglasses on. In fact, I had hair when we had to wear the helmet all the time on the field and off the field. That's spring training. I believe a few hairs here, a few there.
It didn't last. I know that. Yeah, it didn't last. But you know that Pittsburgh at the end of that series, they just went crazy, and it was
the city.
Yeah, the city
sure did.
And I remember that song. You know, the Beat 'em Bucks song. It was everywhere. Yep. Yeah, it was really a magical time.
It was.
So anyway, then we come to 1961 and the team. And then, you know, the thing is, Mr. Grote, it was the team was basically the same.
I saw it happen in the 64 Cardinals.
What happened?
It's not lack of effort.
No.
But for some reason, as soon as things start going bad, everybody gets like this. Pirates finished sixth, Cardinals finished seventh after we won in 64.
So the players that came over, they really didn't make very many changes. They brought in Bobby Shantz, who was a Yankee pitcher. Yep. They brought him in for the Pirates. Johnny Logan, Earl Francis, and Joe Gibbon. Any thoughts about any of those fellows? So then 1962, you had another really good year, and you were an all-star again, and that was the year that after that season they had, well, you were traded, and just personally speaking, it really bothered me that they traded you.
It did me too.
Yeah. Could you talk about that a little
bit? I ever spent.
Yeah.
I was extremely upset. I guess my pride was really hurt. And they struggled until they got.
Was that why they got Johnny Logan too? Was to back him up, or what was the purpose for getting Johnny Logan?
I don't know what
they traded Gino Cimoli to get Johnny Logan.
I don't know why they got Logan. Whether Johnny came to us, or I broke my wrist or not, I can't remember.
Well, that trade, they got the, they traded you with the Yadamiz Olivo, and they got in exchange Don Cardwell and Julio Gauthier.
Julio Gauthier,
and he didn't really make it as a career. He didn't go very far. Cardwell was he was a decent pitcher, but he wasn't Dick Grote.
The worst part about that is to show you how naive I was.
Pardon?
How naive I was. That was my greatest season ever in baseball, 1963. So we played the Pirates in St. Louis, and they were playing an afternoon game the next day and going home. And we were coming into Pittsburgh to play them.
And you were as a Cardinal.
Bob Skinner. I beg your pardon. Jerry Lynch, Joe Burton, and I went to Musial for dinner that night. And before we went out there, we stopped by. I lived in a hotel there. Kids were in school. I was shaving, and they were sitting on my bed. And both of them ended up saying, "Tick, we hate to tell you this, but we're warning you. If Cardwell pitches, you better be alive." Said they're hanging your picture in his locker. It's a nightmare. And they really have gotten to him. I forgot all about it. Drove to the ballpark. Second hitter. Took a strike. Fouled the next one off, and he broke this rib right here. It was like I got shot. I got every bit of it. I mean, square. A broken rib. I said, wonderful. On the same identical date, December 6th, that I broke my wrist in 60. I missed the rest of that Cardinal series. And we go back to St. Louis. And I went, I didn't feel the ground balls. We're playing the Cubs. Took batting practice. I said, Skipper, I can play. Okay, put me in the lineup. First time up, I doubled down the right field line, and I came out of that batter's box. I was, oh, shit. The one thing I didn't try was running. I just barely got to second base. And then a guy by the name of Musial walks up. First pitch, and he singles me home. I run again. I come up the next time and got a base hit. Thank God. Stan hit it off. It looked like it was going to be off the screen. I'm running. Saw the umpire go. I was 2-for-2, and they took me out. We beat Harvey pretty good that day. But I only missed 3 days with that broken rib.
So the trade to the Cardinals was beneficial for you in the long run. It was a good thing because the Pirates weren't going anywhere, but the Cardinals did go somewhere. They were having a couple good years there.
That was, to me, probably one of the luckiest days of my life. I never knew any organization which could be so far above any organization in baseball. Cardinals treat you like nobody ever. They even shipped me home between our opening series in New York and the opening series in St. Louis to go home and make sure my wife and daughter were well when she was born. Paid my flight, gave me the ticket, New York to Pittsburgh to St. Louis.
So you were still living in Pittsburgh then? Primary home, yeah.
My two older girls were in school. And the Cardinal organization, when Mr. Bush owned it, they were the number one in the world. And I've heard this from so many people. I remember telling Roger Maris in spring training, I said, you might think you came down when you went from the Yankees to the Cardinals, but I'll talk to you a year or two from now and you'll find out this is the best organization in baseball.
So the manager of the Cardinals that year in 63 was Johnny Keene.
Yeah.
Now, what do you have any thoughts about Johnny Keene?
I better not forget that.
Well, how would you compare like his style to like Danny Murtaugh, for example?
They weren't even in the same world, much less thinking.
Well, it was funny because in 64 he went, or after 64 he went to the Yankees, and it didn't go.
All I can remember about that was we saw Mickey Mantle in that spring. He said, why didn't you keep this guy? He doesn't know whether the ball's blown up or stuff.
So the GM at that time was Bing Devine. Do you have any recollection of him?
Finest man I've ever met in baseball. More than that.
Well, you were an all-star for the seventh time in 63, second place in MPV voting. We talked a little bit about Stan Musial. That was his last year, right?
Yeah.
So the other players, I know you mentioned Ken Boyer a little bit, but we have Ken Boyer, Bill White, Julian Javier, Kurt Flood, Tim McCarver, Charlie James. Those are just position players, and I'll talk about the pitchers next. So do you have any thoughts on any of those fellas? Pretty effective infield.
I talked to Bob Bucher. He was on that team. Yeah. I talked to him. I talked to Tim McCarver. And this is on the phone. I've stayed in touch with those guys. It was a great experience wearing that Cardinal uniform.
Was there a difference between the style of like a Julian Javier at second versus Maz?
We led the league in double plays my first year there.
And
remember, I had worked with him before. He was a power. He grew up in a pirate organization. Great kid. I like Hoovy.
Bill White was a very good first baseman. He could play any position.
He could hit. Great guy.
Now, the pitching staff, they had quite a pitching staff.
I don't know that anybody has ever happened before. We were the starting infield in the All-Star game.
The whole infield?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. How do you compare Ken Boyer, say, to Don Hoke at third base?
I've always said nobody could be as fortunate as I was. I have Hoke on my right and Mazeroski on my left. I'm traded, and I have Boyer on my right and Javier on my left. I had the best two combinations you could ask for.
You know, one of the things that I've often...
Somebody said, yes, now you're the new manager for Pirates.
What?
You're the new manager.
Yeah, there you go.
You're the new manager for the Pirates.
No, I'm afraid not. nice to
well,
see
who
you.
Who do you think's going to get it?
I have no
Jason
idea.
Jason Kendall.
I don't know.
I don't know.